Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
Hello, and you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I hope you are safe and well as you tune in to our episode this week. Well, over the last, over a year now that Let's Go Green has been on the air, we've talked a lot about the overwhelming nature of climate change and the problems that it faces. And frequently when I'm out and about, particularly if I'm speaking with parents, this idea of climate anxiety comes to the fore, where people are getting more and more concerned about the issue, but don't really know how to deal with it. So I thought we better tackle that as a topic on the show and to talk me through the problem that it is and what we might be able to do a little bit about is Dr. Eoin Gallivan. Eoin, you are very welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much, Aisling.
Now, Eoin, 5-10 years ago, if I had said climate anxiety on the airwaves, there would have been scoffing left, right and central. Whereas now that we are becoming more and more educated about the problems that the Earth is facing, and as we, I think as we experience those extreme changes in weather, like when have we ever had 28 degree days in September in Ireland? That was only recently. It's becoming more of a real world problem for an awful lot of us. And that's bringing a level of anxiety with it. So before we get into the nitty gritty, what is anxiety? You know, like we might get worried about something, but what does it mean to have anxiety about something? Because to me, that's a bit of a bigger deal than just being worried about something.
Really good question. And I think it's important to recognize that anxiety is something that every human experiences. It's an ordinary, everyday part of being alive. So that's one way of thinking about it. It's a sign that you're still alive. It's kind of like an adaptive response to warning or threat. It probably evolved as a way of like a signaling that there's something wrong, something is happening or about to happen that we need to pay attention to. So that's its kind of function. Typically, however, when people talk about anxiety these days, they talk about it as the problematic version of itself, if you want, where it becomes to a point where people can't think, or they think repetitively or problematically, or their behavior changes in such a way that it becomes kind of dysfunctional, if you want, it becomes a problem. And all of us have a vulnerability to moving into that space, depending on what's happening in our lives. So that is also an entirely ordinary characteristic that we can all experience, problematic or troubling levels of anxiety, if you want.
So it is totally normal, and I hate the word normal, but it is part of being human. We are all going to have some level of anxiety about something at some point in our lives.
Exactly.
Okay. And like, I know I had a nasty cycling accident in 2011, and up until then I was not a regular cyclist, but I enjoyed it. Now I have a bit of a phobia around it. And I'd say a bit, because it's not something that bothers me. I just avoid doing it entirely, which might not be the healthiest choice. But that's something that I don't need to think about. I know that I'm a little bit afraid of a cycling because I had an incident, and I can push that to the back of my mind. It doesn't interfere with my everyday lives. Whereas if you think of maybe school students, if they're afraid of public speaking and they have to give a presentation in class, then that is an everyday problem. That is something they're going to have to deal with. But there are tips and tricks for dealing with it. If we have anxiety around what's happening to the environment, like, how do we even broach dealing with that?
It's such a useful observation. And the way that we would normally help people with problematic anxiety is help them engage in meeting the concern, which is usually overestimated through the lens of fear, and helping people realize that this isn't actually a threat or a danger. And you learn to modulate your experience in that context and relearn a relationship with cycling, for example. such that you realize, okay, it was dangerous once, but that doesn't mean every time I get in my bike, it's dangerous. And over time, habituate back to cycling being broadly a safe thing, depending on where you're cycling, of course. Climate anxiety is different in the sense that there is a very real threat that isn't being dealt with, that is understandably creating fear and anxiety. So it really doesn't fit in the frame of how we think about problematic anxiety as being an irrational or overblown response to a not so threatening situation. In fact, you could say that if you're not feeling anxious about the climate, that's actually problematic. Climate change is a hugely significant threat to human health and our stability, right up the scale to the potential for species extinction, societal collapse, food insecurity, mass displacement of people. It would be it's very strange if you're not feeling anxious about those things, because those things are inherently threatening and frightening and threaten our well-being. And, you know, every major organization on the planet, UN, WHO, etc., climate change is a threat to our health and well-being and stability. So the anxiety that we feel about climate, or eco-distress, which is another term, people have a range of feelings. Climate anxiety is a term that's used to actually kind of the door into quite a range of feelings that include feelings of helplessness and powerlessness, maybe guilt, anger, distress, upset, etc., about what's happening to the world. So it's an understandable, ordinary human response to a very real and pertinent threat to our health and safety.
Doesn't make me feel any better, though, I'll be honest. Knowing that, and I think knowing that it's real, like, well, none of us want to feel anxious about anything. You know, it's not something that we would, I think it's fair to say, any of us would choose to feel anxious. So like, how then do we deal with it? It's, you know, given that what we can make individual changes in our own lives, we can recycle better, we can, you know, cut out in the amount of plastic we use in our house, whatever it might be. As individuals, it's very hard to have a tangible, massive impact on this problem. And we're very aware that a lot of the problem solving in a way is above our heads on it. So then if we're feeling all this anxiety, how do we get to grips with it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm not sure that there is supposed to be a single way to somehow diminish or get rid of or reduce that feeling state. But I do think there are ways that we can live with the very understandable distress or anxiety in a way that is helpful. So, for example, people often talk about engaging in activism or joining in groups that are trying to do something about climate change. While we recognize that it doesn't capture that broad scope on societal change that's needed, it does bring you into a positive, productive okay. relationship with the problem. So at least I'm controlling what I can control. Mm. I'm doing my bit. And that has some value in terms of managing the internal world a little bit. It also brings you into contact with other people who are aware of the problem and also feeling how you're feeling and also trying to do something about it. So that kind of sense of kinship and mutual support is also really, really important. But that comes with a caveat as well, because there's a chance that people who engage in activism can experience burnout. They're very close to the issue a lot of the time. Sometimes they feel helpless at the scale of the problem when they realize that governments and those in authority aren't doing as much as they could or should be doing. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. And each individual's journey obviously has to be their own journey. I would say that if you want a solution to climate anxiety, it's one that has to involve significant change on the behalf of government and society, such that the problem is being addressed. So if we're frightened about something that might hurt us or damage us or kind of threaten our health, the solution to that is having a sense of resilience or coping around it. And what gives us a sense of resilience and coping about climate change is when governments and kind of leaders in society and the broader community start to do things to both mitigate the problem and start to lean in towards adaption. So what are we going to do about the problems that are happening? Things like food insecurity, for example, or flood risks that are, you know, becoming more and more obvious in our everyday lives. It's in the absence of those big structural societal changes that it's hard to say that there is a way of quote unquote dealing with, you know, climate anxiety, because it's not being dealt with. So the problem that's causing the anxiety isn't being dealt with. Well, the anxiety is likely to persist. And I think we need to be really cautious about kind of framing climate anxiety as a problem within the individual to be dealt with at an individual level, instead of it being seen as a normal response of humans to their world that is under threat. And just to put a little bit of research context on this, there was a really useful study done, published in 2021 by Caroline Hickman, where they looked across 10 countries, 1,000 young people in each country, aged 16 to 25 years. 84% of respondents, so that's right across the world, reporting being at least moderately worried. 45% saying it was having a negative impact on their daily functioning, so that's their appetite, concentration, sleep, ability to go to school or work. And 83% believing that the governments and adults in the room, if you want, have failed to take care of the planet, and over 80% saying they're frightened of what the future is going to bring for them. So if you are experiencing that problem, first of all, you're not alone. Yeah. This is a really common problem. And when you have something as widespread as that, where you know, masses of amounts of people are experiencing this level of distress, it points to a very, very serious problem in our world. It's not that they've all suddenly become mentally ill with a version of anxiety. That would be a very wrong-minded way of thinking about this. The anxiety and distress they're feeling is because the threat in their world is very real, and it's not being properly dealt with by the adults in the room for the young people. Adults feel this too.
And adults have the vocabulary to talk it out and to listen to the radio and understand, you know, maybe doing things like, do you know what? I'm really worried about this. I could join my local tidy towns and see what they're doing about it. I could join my local political party. I can do something active. But for children, I know it's a really worrying concept. They're going to school and they're learning about climate change in school. I remember learning about it in school, and it worried me, but I didn't have the same reaction that I see young people having now, because there's more evidence, I suppose, nowadays. And I had a conversation, and I think I told you about this off air, with a friend not too long ago, where she was bringing, I think, one of her sons and a couple of his friends to soccer training. And while they thought she wasn't listening and she was driving the car, they were talking about the class they'd had in school that day, where they were talking about climate change. And one of the little boys said, well, what's the point anyway? There's no point us doing anything about it. The world is going to be on fire and we're all going to be dead in 5 years. Now, yeah. This poor mum nearly crashed the car when she heard it, but like kept calm and, you know, went about her daily life. But I know it worried her, and I know it would worry me if I was a parent, that, you know, this idea, I think it's, and it is wonderful that we're informing children of what's going on in the world. And I benefited from that. I'm not going to criticize that at all. But when it's young children who don't necessarily have the ability to understand, you know, the little things that are being done, and there are some changes being made, it can be very challenging as a parent to know then how to cope with that at home. And have you had any advice for parents that might be really worried about the children in their lives and the young people in their lives at the moment?
Yeah, and it is a real challenge. And there is a generational disconnect, I think. Wouldn't it be much better if we were teaching our kids in school about the massive changes we've made in how we live our lives to protect their futures, instead of teaching them about the fact that we are destroying their future by the way that we're, you know, destroying the planet? So, I mean, that kind of goes without saying, but isn't that what that child is saying? It says, well, yeah, you guys are the adults in the room here. What am I supposed to do with this? I'm 10 or 15, or, you know, it's beyond their power to make the changes. In terms of how a parent comes to this, the most important part of that journey is for the parent to become aware of what's happening. And I think a lot of people are still only partially aware. So they're aware at some maybe intellectual level that climate change is a problem somewhere out there in the ether. Maybe it's a problem for future generations, or it's a problem for people in Libya, for example, the recent floods this week. But it's not really a problem for me. So I'm just busy with my day and, you know, getting on with the ordinary kind of run of things. It's really important that parents and teachers are helped to come into an awareness of where we actually are, so that when the child brings it home from school and says, what are we supposed to do about this? The parent knows how serious the problem is, and they have a way to talk about that and have encountered their own distress or their own anxiety or their own feelings about the fact that, you know, we are in serious trouble. And it's kind of there's an interesting silence. There's a really good researcher, Carrie Norgaard is her name. She talks about how we're all not talking about climate change. This interview is obviously an example of the opposite of that. But there's an interesting kind of thing that's been happening in society where we've been actively ignoring it. So we've been hearing about it through, you know, science and media-ish for 30 years. But most of us haven't really sat down and had a really good, hard look at it and really educated ourselves and really spoken about it and what it might be, what the implications of what it might mean to live in a warming world, you know, if we get to 2 degrees or 2.7 degrees, which is kind of where our policy direction is bringing us at the moment. You know, a world without ice caps, a world without glaciers, a world with sea level rises, a world with parts of the world that are uninhabitable for humans, increasing to up to, you know, 1 to 3 billion people. What does that mean? And for most people, I think, they are still grappling with the reality. So when children bring it home from school in whatever frame it's been given to them, and they bring it to the grown-up, if the grown-up hasn't encountered that and really understood it, it's very hard for them to support the child to think about it because they haven't really thought it through themselves. And I would say if we pull back from parents and into schools and into society in general, the government and the media haven't really been playing their part in facilitating an honest, forthright conversation about the scale of the problem and what it really means so that people actually understand it. So we can have the conversations with young people. And instead of it being something that we can kind of dismiss and say, oh, don't worry about that, it'll be okay. Or, you know, the kind of reassurances that we might use in, or, you know, some circumstances that are totally appropriate, we might be able to start saying things like, this is how we're going to face this together. And this is what our community is doing together. And this is what our country is doing together. And while you're right that we have started making some changes, they're nowhere near sufficient to the scale of the problem. Therefore, the anxiety is understandable in that context. I mean, we would still be feeling anxious, even if we were putting every bit of resource and effort, you know, go into emergency mode, kind of like what we did with COVID or other kind of, you know, really serious threatening situations. If we go into that mode and start throwing everything we've got at this, every resource, every bit of time, effort, and energy, it's that serious. We would still be feeling anxious, but at least we would know we are doing everything we can to mitigate the problem and try and adapt to its consequences. And we're nowhere near that on a social level. I mean, some people know that we should be there, but as a society, we're nowhere near that.
And the temptation is there then if you have a young child coming to you worried about this because they've heard something in school or they've seen something on the internet, wherever they've heard it. Oh, don't worry about that. That's nothing to do with you. Or you don't need to worry about that. That's for grown-ups to solve. To try and bat away the problem. But is there a healthier way to deal with it if a child or a young person comes to you in distress about this, that the anxiety is really upsetting them? Is there any advice that you can give to us on dealing with young people who are concerned about it?
Well, first of all, to say that first response isn't entirely bad. You know, sometimes that's still okay. Either I'm not ready as a parent to delve into it with you, or I think that you're not ready to hear the answer to the question. So we find a way of just containing it and saying, put it out of your mind. that's still okay at times. However, you would want to think that a more engaged response would be something like, let me show you what we're doing. In our house, we're doing X, Y, and Z. And here's what we can do. We can, and depending on the age of the child, of course, if you're talking about teenagers, let's write to local politicians. Is there a march we could join? Is there a group we could join? Is there a local community project that's looking at, you know, developing a community garden? Can we advocate through the school to start looking at getting more resilience into the school community? So there's literally dozens of things that you can proactively bring young people with you in. But all of that is contingent on the parent being up to speed and engaged themselves.
Yeah.
So if the parent isn't engaged with it, the question comes in and the parent does what they do to all the information about it probably, which is to kind of think, well, this is not a problem for me now. So, you know, it's like a school project about something that's happening somewhere else in the world, but I don't have to worry about it. So neither do you.
Okay. It's frightening and it is distressing. Of course, if anybody listening to this has somebody in their lives that they're very, very worried about mental health wise, the first port of call will be the GP.
It's an interesting one. In terms of general mental health, then yes, but also to think about our close friends and relatives and communities, that a lot of our supports, if you want, particularly around something like this, that lest we medicalize unnecessarily a problem, because you know the GP can't prescribe a society that's less frightening to you.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they could. And that's not to say that some people's distress wouldn't kind of tip up into a threshold where some mental health service intervention mightn't be useful. Absolutely, that's a pathway. But if we're thinking about the mental health implications of being conscious of climate change, we should be leaning more towards community-based, dealing with it together kind of interventions rather than referral to health service kind of interventions. Not that either of those are necessarily bad. They're just both there.
Well, Dr. Owen Gallivan, I know it's a particular area of interest for you and for your colleagues. And this is something, these are conversations. We're not just having them in isolation. I know it's something that in your own circle of professionals, it is something that psychologists are looking at, isn't it?
Yeah, so we've started a special interest group with the Psychological Society of Ireland. We had a conference a week or so back, which was very kind of well attended in Pearse Library in Dublin, with some experts in the field of the psychology related to climate change. And I think research would suggest this awareness and concern is building. Engagement with the issue is building. And we find it's fairly clear when you look at surveys by the ESRI, for example, that when you put schemes in place to change behavior towards pro-environmental behavioral change, like the SAI AI grants for solar panels, for example, and home insulation, that they get really heavily subscribed. So I think there is a huge amount of latent goodwill across society to do the right thing. We need much bigger moves on the part of government to facilitate those changes, because, you know, all you have to do is pay a little bit of attention to the news and you start to see the very serious implications unfolding. And I think that proximity, you know, it's starting to feel like something that really could affect us. You know, people going on holidays to places, for example, where wildfires are happening and people are being evacuated.
Yeah.
That really lands differently with people than, you know, some kind of global abstract notion of climate change. So I think the profession of psychology has a role in helping understand our inertia, how to engage with the problem, and how to facilitate our momentum towards meeting the challenges, because we do still have within us the capacity and scope to meet these challenges. We still have, albeit a brief and rapidly closing window, to quote the UN, a brief and rapidly closing window to, you know, do make some very significant changes in how we are relating to the natural world. And if we do that, as Mary Robinson says, this is the beginning of a better future for everyone. We can still turn the ship around. And instead of telling kids in school about the problem of climate change, we can tell them about this great effort we're doing to try and protect their future, which would be a wonderful thing to be able to say.
Well, on that hopeful note, Dr. Owen Gallivan, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Go Green this week. I know it's a topic we've been planning to discuss here in the programme for quite some time, so I do appreciate you making time in your very busy schedule.
Thank you very much, Ashley.
We'll be back after the break.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation there with Dr. Owen Gallivan. And Owen was talking to us about the psychology around anxiety with a focus on climate anxiety, which I think, unfortunately, an awful lot of us are experiencing at some level. And while I don't want to pathologize, as Owen was telling us, something that is normal to be concerned about things that we cannot control. If you are concerned about particularly young people in your life and you don't really know where to turn for help and advice, I just thought I'd give you two organisations that the young people might like to get in contact with themselves, because they have texting services available to them. So spunout.ie is an amazing charity for young people around mental health, and they have a service called Text About It. So they can send a text to 50808. So that's 50808. They also can text 086 1800 280. So the two options there are 508 508 with the word now, or 086 1800 280 with the word now, and they can start a conversation there with somebody for help. Or if they would like to make a phone call, they can contact Samaritans on 116 123, 116 123. So the Samaritans also have a information on their website where you can chat with them online. So you can go on to samaritans.org and go through the service there, and they have a section for Ireland, just in case you think that that's an international site. So it's samaritans.org /Ireland. Go on to their contact section there and you can call them day or night or chat to them online. The phone number again there is free, I should say, and it's 116 123. So if you are concerned, they are two ports of call. Again, as always, your local GP or healthcare provider will be able to offer assistance. But maybe, as Owen was saying, maybe we should start having the conversation and saying, do you know what? It is horrible and it is hard and I'm frightened about this too. So let's see what we can do at home about the environment. How can we make an impact in our community of this family and start from there? Instead of it building up into a problem, you know, that needs some significant support at the end of the day. I really enjoyed the conversation there with Dr. Owen Gallivan, so I absolutely will be having him back on the show in the future, particularly around our behaviour and the psychology of our behaviour. Like, why is it so hard for us to make changes that we know are right and good for us even, you know? Why is it so hard to get into a new habit? So Owen has said he'd be delighted to come back on the show. So if you've enjoyed the conversation, please do let me know through midlands103.com, and I will be sure to invite him back. Well, coming up after the break, we're going to look at college students and particularly those who want to be environmentally friendly and sustainable in their eating. So we have some tips and tricks with Yvonne Carty for the new chefs and cooks in our lives coming up right after the break.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. Well, I know we mentioned it at the start of September when we did our slot with Betty McLaughlin about all the environmentally friendly leaning college courses that you can do. But it is the start of the academic year and it's kind of going back to school season. And with lots of young people now trying to be more environmentally minded in their lifestyles, many young people are looking at eating more plant-based foods. The difficulty with that is not everybody heading off to college knows how to cook. And an awful lot of the plant-based foods tend to come wrapped in plastic and be terribly processed and very expensive. And we're all living in a cost of living crisis. And I know what it was like to be a student and broke. So, you know, it's not always feasible. So I thought, why not get our resident chef on, Yvonne Carty. Yvonne, you are very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Ashley.
Now, Yvonne, like, you and I've both been there, being the broke student. You're in, like, I remember when I went to DCU first and I had a tiny, tiny single room with not even a kitchen. It was effectively a kitchenette. And like, the space is so small, even knowing what to cook in that space, you know, can be such a challenge. And then you're sharing with other people. And like, I was lucky, I was interested in cooking before going to college. So I was cooking at home from a very young age and I loved cooking for other people. So I knew how to make a dinner. But for an awful lot of young people heading off to college, it's a bit daunting. It's not something they've had to think about before. So first things first, what are the basic tools that they need if they go into digs or college accommodation and they might not have, you know, pots and pans and a massive budget? If they were to run out to the local supermarket and pick up a few bits, what would you recommend?
Well, I suppose, actually, before we start, I'll say that I was one of those who went off to college and couldn't cook.
No way. Hold on.
I couldn't. I picked up bits and pieces, but I wasn't the best now.
Okay.
Because I was on a totally different path back then, so cooking wasn't in it.
Well, listeners, I have eaten Yvonne's food more than once, and I can tell you that she now is a delicious cook. just to set the record straight, but yeah. Okay.
But if I was starting again, I think if you're limited in space and everything, one of the most valuable pieces of equipment you could have would be a wok or a decent frying pan. And dare I say it, even if you're short on space, you're short on everything, maybe even an air fryer.
I was thinking that too.
And you can get lovely ones that are like little mini ovens.
Mm.
Some of the supermarkets had them on recently. I actually bought one to try it out and I'm finding it very good. And I think if you were cooking for one, it would be brilliant.
Yeah.
So, because you can do, and it's healthy. You're not going to use lots of oil or anything. It's low on energy. It would actually be ideal if you were thinking now, again, going back, showing my age, I mean, I lived in the time of bedsits, so we didn't have college accommodation back then.
Okay.
I'm making myself out to be so old. Of course, I was only there about 10 years ago.
Obviously.
But what I would say is, yeah, good wok or an air fryer. If there is oven facilities or hob, like you can do an awful lot on the hob, and especially if you're going for vegetarian or vegan outlets or options. Like if you could have a store of about 4 or 5 recipes, you know, in your arsenal, have something like a good risotto, vegetable fajitas. And if you want to add in protein or if you want to go down the meat, you can add chicken into that. You could use tofu. You could use halloumi cheese. You know, there's all sorts of different proteins you could put into it. Edamame beans are great for a protein source if you don't want to go and put in meat protein.
And like fajitas, I remember in college, the person who was good at making the fajitas was always popular because, you know, it was such a handy thing. If you had people over, you know, everybody crammed on the one bed, eating dinner or whatever it might be. Yeah. You know, it's kind of it'd be hard to find someone who won't enjoy a fajita. Yeah, it's a crowd pleaser. But if you haven't made one before, because like I know, it's definitely not something I'd cook at home now. It's, you know, it might be something I might get out or that. So like, how does one even start? Like, I know there's packets of stuff that you can buy for fajitas. Yeah.
And actually packets of stuff will be fine.
Okay.
You could get some spices. You could, I would use cumin, smoked paprika and probably a little chili powder and mix that with lime juice and then use that as my sauce. But most of the supermarkets, again, will have a packet for under a euro. And you'd probably get, you know, if you're careful with it, you'd probably get 2 meals out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get onions, peppers. To be honest, I'd get whatever vegetables were on special in your nearest supermarket that week.
Tell me about that now, because I know, and you and I have spoken about food waste before. Mm-hmm. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody, of going in on a Sunday or a Monday or whatever it might be and think, right, it'll be really good this week. And I know there's a name for it, the basket at the bottom of the fridge is full of all these healthy. Yeah.
The salad crisper, isn't that
crisper? The crisper drawer, yeah. That's it. And then by the end of the week, it's all gone a bit ick. So you reckon going to the discount section of the veg in the supermarket?
Yes, there's two options. Well, there's actually a number of options. The one is when you go into most supermarkets now, they'll have special offers. Like one supermarket does 6 for 6, the other does the specials. I know another one, if you go to the vegetable, you know, they all have it. They're all competing against each other. And then in each supermarket as well, or mainly, I think it's mainly Tesco and Dunnes, you'll find that they have a reduce section. And at certain times of day, they'll reduce stuff, which is still in date. It's just about to go out of date. But because of food laws, they can't sell it after the date. So you can get all sorts of bargains that way. If you're a clever shopper, you know, if you're coming out of a lecture, go in, just see what's on. You'll get to know what times they come out at. Now, the other things that have come up as well, and like things have changed. And I mean, I know we've talked about it, but the apps that are available, like the Olio app.
What's the Olio app now? That's a new one to me.
The Olio is, you have Olio ambassadors that will go to the likes of, I think in Tullamore, and I think it's Tesco that mainly do it, but they will go and they'll collect anything that has to be taken off the shelves. And then they put it up on their page on the Olio app and say, this is available, that's available. Now it could be, I know a friend of mine did it for a while and she got one night 13 loaves of bread. And you either give it to your neighbors or you put it up in the app and the people that want it, you claim it and then you just collect it.
Okay.
And so it's cutting down on food waste, you know, stuff that would otherwise go to the bin.
Fantastic. And I know you're going to mention another app in a second. But one trick that I learned after college, and I was very sorry, I didn't know it when I was a broke student. But find a friend who works in one of these supermarkets, particularly one who works in the posher one that has the fancy ads. Because if they end up doing, particularly the college students tend to get the late night shifts because they're in class during the day. And when they're clearing this stock that's coming close to its use by date, the staff get to bring a lot of stuff home. So, you know, if you get pally with someone or even get a job in one of these places yourself, because every student needs a part-time job, you could, you know, really cut down on your food costs as well. I wish I'd known that in college.
Well, when I was in college, I worked part-time in a bakery / coffee shop.
Lovely.
And at 5 o'clock on a Saturday, any of the sandwiches and stuff that weren't sold, I got to bring home.
Oh, fantastic.
I was very popular on a Saturday evening.
I bet you were, but sure, yeah. Why wouldn't he be popular at any day of the week? Now, the other app, what's the other app on?
The other app, there's a charge to it. The other app is Too Good To Go. And what shops, bakeries, who else have I seen doing it? Cafes will do it. And they'll put up saying that at 5 o'clock today or 5 o'clock tomorrow, they'll have a surprise bag and you can buy it for, say, $3.99. But what you get in it should probably be worth about €10. Mm-hmm. So it's just a mixture, whatever they've left over. And again, it's to stop it going into food waste that they'll sell it off. And I bought one from one of the garages, actually, the deli, just to see. And for $3.99, I think I got 3 sausage rolls, 2 scones, 4 pastries, a muffin and something else. So again, like for a group of people now, because like one person's not going to eat all that.
Yeah.
I know some of the supermarkets are on the app as well, but there's obviously people who know when they're coming out because I've never managed to get there in time to get one of the things. But it's a good, you know, they're good ideas, not just for students, I mean, for everybody for helping reduce food waste. But there's the reduce section. I don't know if any other apps, even though I know even on, sorry, in that Too Good To Go, I know even one of the stalls here in the Tullamore Market uses it and you can buy stuff at, like, if they have anything left over at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
So good one to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And like, I think it's, as particularly for young people, if they're moving to a new area, like it might take a couple of weeks to figure out, if you actually pay attention to it, the good times to go on these apps.
Yeah.
But like you said, like, you know, if you're going out, if you're going over to a friend's and you want to bring something, like if maybe someone's doing dinner one night and you want to bring dessert because you want to contribute, $3.99, you know, you'll keep everybody happy, you know. So you could get something really nice. I know in Dublin and the bigger locations, let's say, a lot of the very well-known retailers, like there's a particularly well-known donut retailer who's on all of these apps. So, you know, it's a good way to make friends at the start of the academic year. You mentioned early on there risotto. Now, risotto, I think, is something that frightens an awful lot of people. I enjoy it. I just don't go to the effort of making it all that much because it's hard to do it for one person at a time. Well, what's the trick?
I have a lovely secret recipe for baking it.
No, that sounds like sacrilege.
Well, when you think about it, you're going to bake a pilaf. I know, I wouldn't say it to an Italian person. Apologies to any Italian person listening. But actually, it works out really well.
Okay.
So you fry off your onions or whatever you're going to use, add in your rice, put in, if you're a rich student, throw in a glass of wine, add in your stock and put it into the oven and then finish it off with some cream cheese or something.
Okay.
And a bit of lemon zest. I mean, that's got, having the lemon around, and you can throw it into your whatever, your beer or whatever afterwards, you know.
I know that you're supposed to use, oh God, there's a particular name on the rice, isn't there? The
Carnoli or arborio rice.
Yeah. Do you have to use the special rice? Can you use any rice?
It won't work as well because they're kind of hard and shiny right there. They're very short grain rice. But again, if you go to one of the large retailers and if they have an Italian week, they have that there.
Okay.
That was something else. Yeah, I was thinking, like, if you want to, if you're in accommodation, if you're sharing accommodation, the best thing is rather than everybody cooking singly, if people get together and do a rota, and things that you could do to save money if you can afford, I mean, sounds like a lot at the beginning, but it will pay off in the long run, is to buy things in bulk.
Yeah.
So if you go to the likes of the Asian stores, do great value, large bags of rice, and then the large bottles of soy sauce, oyster sauce, all that. So it's worth kind of making a bit of a plan and having things like, it could build up a basic store cupboard, but it will be, you know, much easier if you can share it from 4 or 5 people.
And if you do go to one of the big Asian supermarkets, like, they are significantly cheaper than the brand name retailers, put it that way.
Yes, I did a large shop in the one in Dublin yesterday on my way home from work.
Yeah, I have to take a trip myself, but you know, they are, like, it's worth it. Now, I know they can be a little bit daunting because you're going in and but once you get used to it, once you get the hang of it, like, and the veg, they have fresh veg as well. Like.
They do. They have lovely fresh veg. And actually, I was laughing. I was talking to the lady at the checkout yesterday because the one that I go to has changed. There used to be anybody in it. They gave it a facelift. It's in an industrial estate and every Saturday now there's queues. Like, unbelievable. It's like it has suddenly become fashionable to shop there.
Yeah. I think that happened during lockdown. Because I remember being terribly excited when I realized one of these outlets, and we won't name, they're all equal, they're all as good as each other, but one of them would deliver to Tullamore and I got terribly excited.
Oh yes, I use that one too.
So, okay. So we've got the risotto, we've got the fajitas. If we're in a share house type situation, you know, go to the Asian supermarket, buy bulk, get the basics together as a group, and then try and share the load. And even from an environmental perspective, like, if one person is cooking each evening, like, it's going to reduce the electricity costs.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's just, it's more sustainable, you know, and it's nice to have a meal and a chat and get to know these people who in most cases are strangers.
It's all about being social. Like, we've got into such a habit of, like, eating on the run and eating in front of the TV and not sitting down and taking time to talk to each other. You know, that's another form of slowing down, making life more sustainable, because it'll reduce your stress, you know, and especially, as you say, if you're new somewhere, if you've moved up like we all did from the country up to Dublin to go to college, it is daunting. And you do need to get to know people.
Yeah, it is. And like, it's, and as someone who teaches in a college, like the friends that you make at in the first couple of weeks of the year, they're the people that get you through the year, get you through the weeks where you might catch a cold and not be able to do the cooking that week, or, you know, or maybe you're falling behind in classes. They, you know, it's that kind of thing that, that really gets you through and helps you, you know, pass the year, which is also quite important. Are there other dishes we could be throwing our hands at that are rather easy to make?
Things like stir fries, things like curries, stews, if you want to go that way, whatever. What else was I thinking? Simple things like quesadillas. Like, you just get two tortillas, put your filling in. I would use something like, you could do as simple as cheese and tomato and just put them together, put them on the frying pan. It's a quick and easy meal. Frittatas, like eggs. If you have eggs, you're going to have a meal.
Yeah.
Eggs, potatoes, anything like that. There was something else. You can do, if you want to, if you're lucky enough to have freezer space, buy some bags of frozen vegetables, like the onions and the peppers and so on, because then you're only going to use what you need.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have to worry about chopping it up or anything like that. So you're cutting down on waste again. I mean, I know we're going on about it, but it is getting very important.
Oh, but it is. And especially in my experience in college accommodation, where the kitchen space is tiny, you know, and you don't want to be the housemate that's the one that's always causing the mess in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, particularly like, not everybody's going to be into the idea of getting into a rota. So if you don't convince the group and you're still trying to do your bit, you know, you want to be the clean housemate as well. You want to.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And like, and the frozen bags of veg and stuff like that, they're fairly inexpensive.
They are. They're like, you'll get them for a euro under.
Yeah.
And then just on that then, so the other thing that would be, well, I find them very tasty and I would use them quite a lot. Things like get a good recipe for a vegetable dal. You know, okay. So you can buy lentils cheaply. You could do a vegetarian chili with lentils. I'd say, Tanya, don't turn your nose up till you've tried it, because I have convinced some carnivores of it. And, you know, easy peasy things. And I mean, from time to time, we have recipes. Or I have recipes up on Hey Pesto, so just keep an eye on as well on my Instagram. I'm trying to do more, but there's ones going back on my website. So there's a lot of vegetarian recipes on there.
Yvonne, talk to me for a second about food safety, because if you've not been the one doing the cooking before, and I remember giving a relative a dig out who needed college accommodation, and my group of friends happened to have a spare room, and God love him, somebody at home had been doing all the hard work and he had never learned from safety and gave himself food poisoning, because he didn't realize that when you put raw chicken into a fridge, you need to cover the raw chicken. So basics, don't put uncooked meats in without some sort of protective packaging in the fridge.
Yeah. And when you're putting raw meat in the fridge, always put it on the bottom shelf. So God forbid, if it does come out of the packaging, the juices can't leak down on anything. They've nowhere to go. Be very careful. Now, this is, anybody who's been to any of my classes will hear me say this and they're probably sick of me. Rice. Be very careful with rice. You should only reheat rice once and make sure that it's boiling when you eat it. If you get, you know, the temptation, if you're able to afford to take away, don't put the rice in the fridge and eat it the next day and then wonder what made you sick.
Okay.
Because chances are it will already have, because obviously, and I'm not disparaging any takeaway, but most, they will cook, they'll have it cooked in advance, and then more than likely it will be reheated when you order.
Oh.
So then, if you reheat it the next day, you're reheating it for the second time.
And that's the problem.
That's where you're going to get the problem.
Okay.
Other things, yeah, chicken is the big thing. And then storing it and then cooking it, make sure it's cooked through.
Yeah.
Likewise with sausages.
Yeah.
You know, you get away with rare or medium rare beef or lamb, but make sure pork and chicken are cooked through.
Fully cooked through, yeah.
Yeah.
And if maybe somebody's listening has an inexperienced cook heading off to college, maybe give them, you know, a lesson at home. And this is what a cooked piece of chicken looks like. And this is what a properly cooked sausage looks like. Because, you know, they're not psychic. You know, they're not going to pick these things up unless somebody takes them in hand.
And you'll get, I mean, if you really want to be careful, you'll get an inexpensive thermometer for under a tenner. And you want it to be 75 degrees.
Okay.
Okay. To be safe.
And if you are doing the rota, you don't want to be the one that gives the whole house food poisoning, because that will never be forgotten.
And obviously hand washing, you know, keeping your cooking area clean, like the things that you shouldn't really have to think about, that you should do automatically, but then we don't.
Yeah, so like if your hands have touched raw meat, you wash your hands before you touch anything else. Oh yeah, absolutely,
before you touch anything else.
Just so we're very clear, very blatantly obvious on it.
Yes,
all right, okay. And if you have somebody who needs a little bit of help in this, go on to heypesto.ie for some lovely recipes.
Thank you very much.
You know, very easy to follow recipes in my experience as well, if you're not an experienced cook, and lots of good variety there. But I think some fantastic tips, Yvonne. So the Olio app, Too Good To Go, and look and see, figure out when your local supermarket puts out the discounted vegetables.
Yeah. So. And they're now hiding them all over the store. There's not just one anymore.
Yeah.
There's different ones. And the stuff is perfectly good.
Yeah. Yeah. And just if there are any parents listening, I remember living with somebody whose mother sent him back to Dublin every weekend with Ziploc bags of like individually portioned out chicken fillets and burgers and steaks. And the rest of us in the house ate like kings for the entire year. The poor woman was feeding all of us. So like, have an honest conversation, okay? Because that individual, the deal that we did with the guy, he didn't cook. He refused to cook. And all he wanted to eat were those, you know, those awful things, Vaughn, the microwavable hamburgers you can buy in supermarkets. Yeah, I know they're criminal things, okay? And they're probably not
I've never heard one. I never want to see one.
Oh no, they're absolutely awful. How he didn't make himself seriously ill, I don't know. So the deal was, there was three of us in the house. So myself or the other person, we would do the cooking, but we would share in his meat, his butcher's shop, basically. And it was all because he didn't want to upset his poor mum's feelings. So if you are the person sending the student off to college, find out what they're actually eating. Like, don't be feeding other people's children unnecessarily, because they're all broke college students. They might not want to own up to that one. But yeah, Vaughn Carty.
My mother used to be great for sending. I didn't come home that often, but when I did, she was great for sending back food. And again, lots of visitors on the night I came back.
Yeah. There was always a queue if my mother sent me back baked goods, because that's definitely her speciality. Mm. And they always went down a treat. It was a great way for socializing in first year in college. But Yvonne Carty of Hey Pesto, you are on Instagram, Facebook, and heypesto.ie. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time. I'll be back after the break.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.
You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103, and I'm afraid we are right out of time. If you have missed a recent episode of the show here on FM on Monday nights at 7 o'clock on Midlands103.com, you can always listen back to Let's Go Green with Aisling O'Rourke on your preferred podcast app. The show is available on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts. So just type in Let's Go Green with Aisling O'Rourke and the search function will bring you right to all of our episodes, which go live after the show has gone out on FM each Monday evening. As always, please do feel free to get in contact with me if you'd like to suggest an item for the show. You can hop over to midlands103.com, click on the on-air team, find my name, Aisling O'Rourke, and there's a direct email button there where you can send me a message. I might not be as prompt as I would like to reply to them, but I do read each and every one of those emails, and you're always more than welcome to get in touch, tell me what you think of the show, what you'd like to hear me talk about on the show, and even, as one person has done recently, suggest somebody else that she thinks I should be speaking to on the show. I promise, sometimes it takes a couple of weeks, but I do try to follow up on each and every one of them. I will be back same time next week with another episode of Let's Go Green. But in the meantime, have a great week, stay safe, and enjoy Midlands103.com.
Let's Go Green, sponsored by Airgrid, managing and operating Ireland's electricity grid for a cleaner energy future. Check out airgrid.ie for more.